We're all ready to go.
Board operator.
What are you waiting on me for?
Because without you, none of this... Without you, we just have 45 minutes of silence.
Because we don't know how to start it.
Hi, I'm Gary Greenberg from U.S. Stamp Shop on eBay, and you're listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
Look at them, madam. Have you ever in your entire life seen anything so beautiful?
I'm sorry, I don't know anything about stamps. Oh.
This is the gentle art of philately, otherwise known as stamp collecting. Here's a pile of stamps carefully culled from swap meets and garage sales.
Rupert, what are you thinking of?
Oh, I was just thinking of all the years I wasted collecting stamps.
Oh, like stamp collecting. Oh, that's all right. That's quite a nice hobby, that.
Yes, but it's not enough. Don't you understand? I'm lonely. I'm so terribly lonely.
All right, Homer! You beat those stamp Nazis with good old-fashioned American complaining.
Homer, if it weren't for you, we'd be at the mercy of weekend philatelists.
You know, why didn't you just say stamp collectors?
Because I'm tired of dumbing myself down for you.
I mean, I have to say, when I heard that, like, people actually watch this show, I was actually pretty surprised.
I'm Ernest Borgnine. I collect stamps.
From Spain and two from Japan. I got a couple from Israel and Azerbaijan. I got a plenty from Poland, but none from Sudan or from Fiji or Uzbekistan.
Stamp collecting happens when we dream together.
Welcome to Stamp Show Here Today, episode number 89.
I'm Cash.
That's Scott.
I'm Scott.
This is Don.
And I'm your host, Don. On August 23rd, 1305, 711 years ago, almost to the day, Scottish patriot William Wallace was hanged, beheaded, drawn and quartered in London. Might be a good night to watch Braveheart. So, this week we'll be reading more stamp emails, Cash's corrections, and our expert topic will be on topical collecting. Now we get emails, so summon the answer squad. So our first email is from Burns Searfoss. I found what appears to be a Scott number 25 claret on cover. The claret color is reasonable because it was mailed in 1859. The stamp has two blunt, short perfs on the right, but is well centered. So I do not know if it's worth getting graded as a stamp or just having the letter certified. Is it worth having the stamp plated so the variety of recutting would be known? Is the stamp of better value on or off cover? All of this costs money to get the stamp slash cover certified, graded, and plated. How far should it go before it costs more than it's worth?
Well, the first issue I think we have is, do you soak the stamp off the cover? And for that, there are a number of things you have to consider. I know we've talked about this before, but the first thing you have to look at is first of all, is it worth more on cover? Is there some significance to the cover? But one of the things we didn't mention before is, does the cover have contents? If the cover has contents, you also have to consider what the contents of the cover are, because the cover maybe just a generic, boring cover, and the contents are really what tells the story. You see a lot of that with the Confederate states, but in this particular case, Mr. Searfoss did send us some scans of both the cover and the contents, and the contents are what's interesting for this. And so in this instance, I would say because the contents, the stamp should not be lifted off the cover.
And the contents are really super cool, too. When I first looked at it, I thought this cover maybe was like a $25 cover. But the contents, it's an invitation to the Masonic Hall in Comanche, Iowa in 1859. It's a full, embossed, really, really nice-looking invitation. The cover, a number 25 is a valuable stamp. But in kind of ratty condition on a little ratty cover, it's not worth that much. Personally, I think this Masonic cover, though, is probably a $200 item, maybe more. And it matters that the stamp is there. It matters that it's in the envelope. But the value of this item is so much higher than the actual value of the stamp. It crosses many categories of collectibles. And whenever you get something like that, you know you got a home run.
Now, you could separate the contents from the envelope, but there's really not much sense in that because you're actually going to devalue both items by separating them. So you want to keep them together and you want them to be displayed. That's where the value is in that item.
Yeah, somebody is not going to buy this because they want a US number 25 on cover. They're going to buy this because it has a really, really neat Masonic tie to the Comanche Lodge in Iowa, in a time when Iowa didn't have that many people in it. So, yeah, this is a way, way more cool item than the stamp on the cover.
Absolutely. If you want a 25 on cover, go find a cover without contents. Or if you want just a plain 25 stamp, go find a stamp that's already off the cover. Those are much more readily available, and this item is well worth keeping intact.
Yeah, and I'm going to try to put this on YouTube because it is such a neat-looking item. Telling you just real quick about a number 25, though. Number 25s were cut from old plates. They weren't meant to be perforated. They just said, hey, we've got these plates. Let's go ahead and start putting holes in the stamps. You know, basically, they invented perforations in the 1850s, and in 1857 they started perforating U.S. stamps. And it's kind of interesting to realize that, you know, pulling stamps apart by the little holes, that was actually invented. I mean, somebody said, hey, why don't we put holes there? Well, the stamps that they were printed, you know, were laid out artisanally. They were artwork, they were engraved, and people didn't put enough spacing in them. So these stamps are always horribly centered also. So they've got, they're ratty, it's an ugly issue that I love, but it's an interesting stamp too, the number 25. But again, being on a Masonic invitation cover, it's worth way, way more as a Masonic piece of memorabilia than it ever will be as a stamp collecting piece of memorabilia.
Well, and I'll have to look it up and get more details, but when you talk about contents, I recently applied to and just got all my information for the Confederate Stamp Alliance.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I got like 3 back issues of the Confederate Philatelist, and one of them had a story of a cover that was going back and forth between letters that were going back and forth between the North and the South, talking about prisoner exchanges and things like that. Oh. So it was actually like the two commanders sending mail under flag of truce. So it's just, I'll have to get more information on it because I just don't remember everything, but it's really cool.
So you have a 25-cent stamp on cover that may be worth 50 cents. With its contents, it's worth hundreds of dollars.
With like a rear admiral or something like that, you know, talking to a general from the other side, and North and South talking to each other.
Yep. I love the story behind the stamps, and this one has a massive story behind it.
Now next, Robin writes, hi, I have a small question regarding a Scott 594 one cent. I'm finding a lot of conflicting information with design size expectations. In your personal experience, what width range should the stamp be in? Some sites say 22.75 millimeters, but this is measuring under that, about 22.6 to 22.65, I would say. I know you're most likely a very busy man, so no hurry to respond, but when you have a chance, I would be so grateful for some insight. Thank you.
And well, thank you, smiley face.
Yes,
smiley face.
Well, 594 and 596 are rotary press waste. So let's just talk about identifying the 1 cent Fourth Bureau issues. The first thing you want to do is determine if it's rotary or flat plate. How do you do that, Cash?
That's easy. You don't even look at the face of the stamp. You turn it over. And if you look on the back of the stamp and you see, this is a green stamp, okay? It's a 1 cent green stamp. I think like 3 billion or 4 billion of them were printed.
A lot.
A lot. More than you want to count. The front of it is green. You turn it over. If you look at the back and you see green ink, It means that it sat on top of another sheet of stamps.
Why is that?
That's because they were printed by the flat plate and they were stacked up after they were printed.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about that. The flat plate printings, they were printed by the sheet and the sheets were stacked so that the ink would dry. They were not gummed. So therefore, these green spots that you may see are, in fact, ink from the next sheet down that transferred when it dried. Now, the rotary press stamps were actually gummed as part of the process as the paper moved through the printing press. So by the time the stamps were cut into panes and stacked and all of that, it was already gummed and the gum dried. So therefore, you shouldn't see any green specks on the back. Now, this is going to be accurate about 95 to 99% of the time. You will find a few every now and then flat plate printed stamps that don't have the green specks, but it's generally a characteristic of flat plate printing.
Well, there had to be one on the bottom of the stack.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. I would say it works 99% of the time, and the 1% is the sheet that's on top.
Yeah, I mean, you could have really dry condition where the sheets did get dry enough before they got stacked, but very infrequently would that have happened. But you're right, yeah. Generally not going to find too many stamps without that offset. Or set off, depends on how you want to define it. But it's basically the same thing. It's coming from the next sheet down in the stack. Rotary press stamps don't have that. They were printed, and then the ink went through a drying station, and then they were gummed, and then it went through a drying station, and then they were cut up into panes and stacked.
Yeah, people who watch old movies and they see the newspaper printing machines with the web of paper shooting through, that's rotary press. That's why they weren't stacked on top of each other when the ink was wet. They had these big, huge things, and they were all shooting through, whereas the other ones were a page goes on, gets printed, somebody lifts it off, puts it in a stack. So it's an entirely different mechanization. But anyway, the reason why this is always coming up is 594 catalogs, $150,000 or something like that. Which one's the one that you can buy a house with?
596.
Okay, and 594 is, I guess you can buy a...
You can only buy the outhouse in here.
Yeah.
Well, at least that's here in California.
Yeah. So we're talking about major, major expensive stamps. And that's why people send these in, is they go, oh my God, this stamp, which they printed several billion of. Oh my God, I found one. Well, of course you found one. They're all over the place. And they say, oh my goodness, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to measure this with a ruler, convert it to millimeters, and they're just struggling with trying to figure it out because it's half a millimeter difference.
Well, it's actually less than that.
Yeah, so I mean, a half a millimeter is, it's the width of a wire, you know, or...
A very tiny wire.
Yeah, a tire, well, it's small, okay, and you're trying to figure this out. When the really super, super easy thing is turn it over, and if on the back of it you see any green ink, guess what? It's
now,
not it.
Now, another thing is the flat plate stamps were never printed in a yellow-green color. The vast majority of stamps that I see that are submitted as 594 or 596 come in and they're this just bright yellow-green color, and it's no way.
Yeah, wrong color too.
Wrong color.
But that's into expertizing. You need to
right.
expertize. This is something that 99% of the time works, and 99% of the people who hear this will save themselves $30 by not having to send the stamp in for a certification.
Right. 594 and 596, although they are rotary press, were never printed in the yellow-green shade.
Yes.
Only in the green shade. But a lot of flat plate printed stamps were printed in dark green and green, as well as some of the lighter shades. Now, the other thing you need to check is you need to check and make sure that the vertical perforations don't measure 10.5.
Yeah, it could be a
because
misidentification.
The 11 by 10.5 perforations are very, very, very common. And that's frequently what we get submitted as 594 or 596 in error. It's just the real common run-of-the-mill rotary press stamp.
But I know it's people have those kind of stamps and they just only just... so excited. It's like they always want to think they automatically have the one because they just keep hearing all the time in their brains.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, well, my favorite...
You can't convince them otherwise sometimes.
My favorite story is the 1901 one-cent coil. And there was clickbait on a computer, and it showed this one-cent green stamp, and it didn't have the perforations on the left and right side because it was a coil. But people who aren't stamp collectors don't know this, and they look at it and go, hey, I've seen one of those. And yeah, of course you have. They printed like a billion of those also. Every postcard had one on it. So if your grandmother or great-grandmother ever went to Coney Island and sent you back a postcard, you've got one of these stamps. And so they came down. They drove all the way from Palmdale. So they were on the road for like 2 hours to come down here. He brought it in. It was all wrapped up in toilet paper, which was also funny. And he goes, oh, can we go in the back? This is really valuable. And I say, well, let me see. And he unwraps it. And
it's got perforations on all four sides.
And I had to explain to him that, you know, the computer likes clickbait. They like getting people to get excited about stuff. And what's more exciting than, you know, showing them a stamp that chances are they have one and saying it's worth $150,000, and all of a sudden everybody goes crazy.
So it's not just the design. There's a lot of other things that go into making these rare stamps truly rare.
Yeah, well, rare is rare. We should discuss that sometime because...
How about that guy from, was it Ireland, who discovered an inverted Jenny? And it turned out to be one of the stolen McCoys.
Yeah,
he had a real one.
Yeah.
He sure did. It can happen. It turned out it was a stolen copy, but it was real.
Well, the interesting thing is I like to compare how different stamps are from baseball cards. Because baseball cards, if you get a 1933 set of Goody baseball cards, the odds of there being a Babe Ruth card are exactly the same as having a card from Joe Nobody. Joe Nobody's card is worth $15. Babe Ruth's card is worth about $1,000. Stamps aren't like that. A rare stamp, you know, like I said, a billion or 3 billion of those stamps were issued. And out of the 3 billion, a couple hundred of them were this. So your chances are not like the Babe Ruth card. The chances are very, very remote that you're going to have one. It does happen. It's tough.
Well, I've got some items that are extremely rare, you know, less than five known. But they weren't very expensive because they're not popular.
Oh, yeah. I have a...
There aren't 500,000 collectors out there looking to own my Babe Ruth card.
I have a unique item. It is a U.S. number 26 with a St. John's steamboat cancel in red. It's the only one that's known. They heard about another one. This one may be the one that they heard about, but this is a unique item. And unfortunately, there are only a handful of people who want a St. John's steamboat canceled on a U.S. number 26. So, you know, instead of being worth, you know, $7.9 million like the one-cent magenta,
it is $9.7
million. It's worth more like $50 to $100, which is still better than nothing. But
well, it depends on how bad the other guy wants it, what it's worth.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's worth whatever he'll pay you.
I want to find the person who's collecting St. John's Sound steamboat stamps. And then I've got my payday. I think I got to wait a while.
Or you got to start looking.
Twill Z124 asks from the Netherlands, do you think Russian stamps from the Crimea will have value? How should they be collected?
Well, I think that the stamps from the Crimea probably do not matter. You want to collect the envelopes. You want to show the occupational issues and stuff like that and try to get the dates of when the Russians, like, invaded. When did they start issuing Russian stamps in the Crimea? Things like that. Actually getting the stamps from the Crimea, unless it's, like, a provisional issue or it was overprinted for use in Crimea, probably, you know, there's not going to be any difference in value between one used there and one used in Moscow. But I saw this email and I go, if you know somebody who's like in the Russian army who you can get letters from, absolutely you know, write to them, have them write as much as possible.
And use whatever stamps you can find locally.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And if you could, like, get an envelope that has both Ukrainian and Russian stamps, like mixed usage, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know exactly, you know. You know,
50 years from now, those things will be desirable.
Oh, I don't think it'll take 50 years. I think it'll take a couple of years.
Well, it depends. Postal history is becoming more popular. Any war zone or area of conflict is always a very ripe field for rare and unique, unusual items that are highly desirable.
Yeah, and try to get them on cache-aid covers, like a business cover or... of course, if you know, you have somebody who's in the military, that's the big way to do it.
But yeah, an army usage.
Army usages would be really cool.
I mean, how many times do I get things from dealers saying, hey, do you have any of this from World War II? Or, you know, I'm looking for Hubba Hubba covers from Vietnam, or I'm looking for free covers from servicemen, you know, all sorts of different things.
Well, my friend Blake was in Desert Storm. And I actually sent him the envelopes.
I didn't see him.
I sent him the envelopes that had like pictures of B-52s and stuff like that on it. And he got them all canceled and sent back for the APO. That's the unfortunate thing, is it didn't say where they were from or anything like that, because he couldn't tell anybody. But it's a neat cover with a picture of a B-52 bomber. It has the U.S. stamp, a flag stamp. And then it has a cancel just that says APO and then a number underneath it. On the back, I wrote, you know, where it was from. But from the front, it doesn't look like it. It could be from anywhere. Sometimes you need a little bit of backup documentation.
But you can look that up.
Oh, I'm sure you can.
Rick Hall writes, I confess myself to be completely ignorant about Pokemon Go. I assume that
I'm right there with you.
Well, can I join that club?
I'm not entirely ignorant.
It's a small club, I've heard.
It is a small club.
Wow.
I assume that is a game for mobile devices that apparently uses GPS to locate the bad guys, and the player gets points for capturing or eliminating these bad guys. And in pursuit of this goal, some number of people have managed to kill themselves or be killed. Okay, it is well known that there are some stupid people in this world, but this stupid? The short answer is yes.
Apparently.
Why problem make when you no problem have, you don't want.
I've seen a lot of the little viral videos where people are like playing on their iPads and walk into things. So I have no doubt that it actually has happened, but I wonder, really, has it ever happened? Or to what extent?
Well, I have seen a couple of things.
I've heard of people walking in front of cars and things like that and getting hit.
There's a video going around that was on YouTube some weeks ago. There was a guy playing Pokemon Go while driving, and a cop had somebody else pulled over, and his body cam caught the guy ramming into the side of the police car because he was playing Pokemon Go while driving and actually ran into the police car.
Mm-hmm. Well, there were stories of, you know, people going out, you know, at night, going to these deserted places. Other people are watching
robbing
them and... Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, my wife, we were at a park this weekend, and I said, I can't believe I don't see people playing this all over the place. She's like, oh, I have. I watched somebody almost walk into the lake like 10 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. They were just busy staring at their phone, walking along like they were playing the game and looking for stuff. And I guess just out of their peripheral vision, realized they were about to step in water and stopped just short of actually plunging into the lake at the park. The only thing is, I wish she had that on video.
Well, what we have to do is we have to get everybody who plays Pokemon Go to collect stamps instead.
Stop collecting Pokemon, start collecting stamps. Gotta catch them all.
Well, I've heard it's had a really great resurgence on the price of the Pokemon cards.
Oh, yes, yes. I've seen...
I mean, if you wanted to talk about real collectibles. Yeah.
I have seen advertising now for the Pokemon Go cards. And I haven't seen advertising for those in years. But, you know, this thing is so popular now that they are having a resurgence in the cards.
Sounds like it's time to go get my son's Pokemon cards out of the storage unit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Sean has a Pokemon card that is worth $35. And I'm just looking at it going, you know, I know magic cards get up there and stuff like that, but this is one that he just pulled out of a pack and it's worth $35. That's incredible.
Well, you use that money and buy a few more packs and hopefully get a few more of those cards.
Well, that's, of course, what he would do. If he got $35, he'd just buy more Pokemon until he had a bunch of Pokemon cards and no money.
Like welcome to being a kid.
Yeah.
We all go through that phase, I think.
And now for hashtag stamp stories. Except for we don't have any stamp stories. So if you have any ideas or suggestions for us, please email us.
At bluepaper@gradingmatters.com. bluepaper@gradingmatters.com.
I got a stamp story for you.
Oh, okay.
Oh?
Yeah. Come and see me at CPEX in Seattle on September 9th to 11th, I believe.
Okay.
Or 10th. It's the weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Not a very exciting story, though.
No.
It's more like an announcement.
Yeah, it's more like... Okay. I put it into the announcement category.
Okay. Or catch me the following weekend in Houston at the Greater Houston Stamp Show.
And the week after that?
Oh, and the week after that, you can catch me at SESCAL. I'm just a busy, busy guy.
You can catch all of us at SESCAL. That's local for us. We're all going to be at SESCAL. We'll have our equipment out there. We'll record people and everything.
So that's my stamp story, and I'm sticking to it.
Good stamp story. And now for Cash's corrections. Cash.
Yeah, but what they can't see is Cash's head bobbing up and down.
Like a chicken.
Just like a chicken.
I like that song. I wanted to go back to political mail because I haven't seen any myself. Nobody has sent me any or told me any. But my mother, she got two letters from Hillary Rodham Clinton. And they are...
Head up to the microphone.
Ooh, look, here up to the microphone.
Everybody look.
See, one's white and one's brown. And so these I have are the only two that I have seen in the last couple weeks. Now, hopefully, as the election draws closer to November 8th, more will be appearing. But, you know, I'm trying to get something from Trump, and I haven't seen I have seen zero Trump mail. All I've seen is Hillary mail so far.
You're in California. I don't think you're going to see a lot of Trump mail.
Well, who knows?
That's weird because most people assume that California is just a foregone conclusion going Democrat. But I think if Trump tried out here, he'd get a lot more support than he bargained for.
Well, remember when we went up to Westpac?
Oh, yeah. We got up there and they had a rally down here and it was violent and everything else.
Well, it was packed. Zillions of people.
And then the next night it was up there and we couldn't even get to the show.
Yeah. So, but in any case, you know, even if California always goes to the Democrats, you know, they're not going to turn away their money. They're not going to say, oh, well, California is Democratic, so we don't want any money from California. But anyway, so... If people see Trump mail out there, please, please, please save it for me. I want to get some Trump mail. I have Hillary mail. I want Trump mail. Second thing is Ray Lieberman's podcast. A lot of people out there listen to the last podcast. And
Ray Lieberman's podcast?
Yeah.
You mean his interview?
Oh, his interview on our podcast? Yes,
his interview on our podcast. Does he have...
Because we didn't plug his podcast, but he's got one.
Okay. Well, our podcast with him on it then. He's getting a lot of subscribers, so please, people, if you're interested even a little bit in grading, send him an email, subscribe to his newsletter. Very, very good. I'm going to see Stan Iceland tonight. Funny thing, we are both, and we're going to have Costco pizza. Anyway, he applied for a job here at PSE, and I have a couple of his past job references, and I wanted to just read a couple of them because I'm not sure if he's up to snuff for us. But he says, my first job was working in an orange juice factory, but I got canned because he couldn't concentrate. Then he worked in the woods as a lumberjack, but he just couldn't hack it, so he gave it the axe. And then after that, he tried being a tailor, but wasn't suited for it, mainly because it was a so-so job.
Ha 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 Continue.
He worked at a muffler shop, but he got too exhausted. He tried being a chef, figured it would be a little spice, add a little spice to his life, but he just didn't have the time. Okay, Stan, I guess I'm done here.
Oh, please. I mean, you might as well see it to the end.
No. We know Stan's a punny guy.
He is. He definitely is.
But that was plenty for today.
Oh, my God. Who the hell cares?
And now our expert topic. Last week, Scott was sick, so we were going to talk about doctors on stamps. Then we were going to talk about illness on stamps. Then we were going to talk about medicine on stamps. After all this, we just decided to talk about collecting topical stamps.
Everything that has to do with doctors, medicine, stamps.
So I know we asked before, but for our new listeners, what topics do we collect and why? Now I'm going to start because I collect dragons, and dragons are, like, awesome. And for that one person who hasn't heard it pretty much every episode, Cash, what do you collect?
I collect chickens on stamps. And I collect them because the 1948 chicken industry stamp really got me intrigued because it celebrates 100 years of nothing in particular. It was a bureaucratic stamp. I just love that whole story behind it. And as I collected that stamp and I went for the different usages and the different first day covers, it started ballooning out. So now I look for, like, stamps from Chicken Alaska and stamps from various chicken people and people who are raising chickens. So this one little interest in this bureaucratic stamp just sort of blossomed into all chicken-related stamp topics.
Did you guys see something? Chicken?
That's Cash when he's going around stamp shows now.
Oh, I do like chicken stuff. So, Tom, what do you collect?
I'm really getting into the Civil War stuff, nice. But that's not really necessarily topical. I know CSA is kind of its own general thing, but I haven't really gone after any specific topics yet. My oldest daughter is way into basically every living, breathing, swimming, flying creature. She's got dinosaur stamps and bug stamps and fish stamps. And
so her topic is like living things on stamps.
Yes, as long as it's in the animal world. She doesn't collect people.
Critters.
Critters.
She's into critters.
Critters on stamps.
Critters on stamps, yeah.
Real and imaginary.
But I have to say, at the Portland show, I got her the Canada blue whale, and that thing is insane.
Oh, yeah.
I think we talked about it already, but it's still, I mean, it's just huge.
Anybody who hasn't heard or doesn't know what he's talking about, check out our prior episode. I think we go into it pretty deep.
Yes. Pretty deep. Oh, I see what you did there.
We're getting our money out of that sandbox, aren't we?
I have to beef it up.
Well, Scott, what about yours?
I collect non-traditional materials on stamps. So if your stamp
uranium
is made,
on stamps?
So yeah. If your stamp is made of wood.
Oh, I get it.
Or if your stamp is made of lace, or it has crystals attached to it, that sort of thing.
Excellent. Yes, I know exactly what you're speaking about. I know one of the first weird stamps like that I ever saw was from Sweden, and it was a cloth stamp. And that was, I looked at it and go, man, this is awful thick. Because it was a thick piece of cloth. I mean, it was sewn thick. It wasn't just like a thin piece of paper cloth or something.
Is that really a thing?
What?
I've never heard of it.
Mm-mm. Oh, yeah. And he brought up this the Sikorsky's crystal stamp.
Is Swarovski's,
that,
yeah.
That's the one.
Sikorsky's a helicopter stamp.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a little big. I didn't have room for it in my album.
I knew it was an S word.
I've got a pair of Lederhosen.
Mm-hmm.
I have a ceramic stamp.
Oh, where'd that come from?
Austria, I believe.
Is it ceramic, like if you bent it, it would crack?
No, it's like a quarter inch thick.
Oh, whoa.
It's ceramic.
If you bent it, it would break.
Yeah.
If you put it on an envelope, wouldn't stay.
You'd have to add more postage. It'd be too heavy.
Well, yeah, that's the thing I was just thinking is, you know, you have a 1 ounce postage stamp, and then all of a sudden you boost your envelope up to 2 ounces by putting the stamp on it.
Yeah, well.
Good way to earn extra money.
Print stamps that'll never be used.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm sure that that's 100% collector interest.
Now, one thing I don't collect is the lenticular stamps, like the Bhutan stamps. I don't collect those.
Well, because those are still on paper. They're just, they have the lenticular artwork.
Right.
That's 3D, right?
That's the ones that have like the prism.
The motion.
You turn it back and forth and it's like, okay. You know, the dinosaur chomps something.
Got it. I didn't know what lenticular was.
You learned something.
I did.
How about that?
Cool.
Sorry, I didn't mean to teach you anything. Okay, so now we know what we collect.
So what got you started on that? I mean, it's interesting, and I've seen them a lot.
Well, just because I thought that they were really, really, really unusual.
Yeah.
And it was, non-traditional.
How do you display them? Because, I mean, like you said, if you have these really thick stamps.
Well, obviously, you can't put them on a sheet of paper, an album sheet.
Yeah, that's...
You kind of have to just store them individually.
Do you have any on, like, first day cover? Because I'm kind of curious how they canceled them, or...
No, although I know Canada Post had a recent issue. I saw it in New York. I did not buy one, but it was a large lenticular. It was, probably 5 inches by 6 inches, and I wanted to actually mail one. Mm-hmm. And the clerk there says, yeah, you can mail it, but it probably won't arrive at destination because somebody will grab it and keep it. So I was really bummed about that. But I wanted a used one, and I wasn't going to get one. So.
Well, that was a problem I had with the 3D stamps that the U.S., the space stamps.
The holograms.
The holograms.
Yeah, I was just going to ask about that.
That's different. Hologram stamps, yes.
But first of all, they were impossible to punch out, the round one, the $10 yes. and 75 cent stamp or whatever. So I got one of those. It was impossible to cut out and keep the perforations, so it had bad perfs. Then I stuck it on the envelope, and it stuck on the envelope nice, but it went through the canceling machine, and the cancel just like wiped off it. So I don't actually have a used one. I have a mint no gum one.
Well...
And it's damaged because it, you know, got beat up.
Yeah, I have a few. I don't have all of them, but I do have a few of the hologram stamps from that issue, and including the round one. And you're right. It took the ink a while to dry, but eventually it will dry. And as long as it wasn't wiped before it dried, it did sort of stick to the... It didn't really stick to
the hologram. The plastic part.
Yeah, it didn't really stick to the hologram part, but it did stick to the rest of the stamp, yeah. And so you can tell that the stamp was canceled. You just not on the hologram area.
Yeah, that's a tough one for...
And the round one is tough because it was black.
Yeah.
Tom, you collect Civil War. You collect Confederate, Union, Civil War era... You mean
well,
more specific?
For me, it's Confederate. I just, mm-hmm. I mean, because the Union was still U.S. postage. It's this all stuff you see. But there's something about looking at that stuff to me and seeing the, you know, little Confederate States of America, because it's CSA. Such a short period in time in Portland. I sat down probably for about an hour with Patricia Kaufman.
Mm-hmm. And shout out to Patricia.
We talked a lot about some of the areas, and it's like, you know, it's like, oh, there's only, and what is it, 15?
14.
14 general.
14 Scott numbers.
14 yeah. Scott numbers. But it's, to me, it's not just that. I think it's the first area that really grabbed me, not just as stamps, but as postal history. You know, the through the lines mail, the blockade mail, items traveling north and south between different officers under flags of truce. It's just so cool, you know. Looking at that kind of stuff, and it's just such a, I think it's because it's such a small window, and it's not like a normal, like, wars that you see everywhere else. It's, you know, overseas, and this was all within the U.S. It was yep. all within our states.
Actually, it wasn't, and that was some of the big things, is the Confederates built a lot of their ships in England, and the United States went out there and said, hey, we're going to, like, you know, we're going to cause you problems if you start shipping these ships to the Confederates, and Some of the best Confederate ships were built with parts from England. There are some great stories about the ships that came across and, You know, the spies that snuck over there to book them, and these shipyards were building these ships, and they go, well, that's not a Confederate ship. That's, you know, a fishing boat. And they go, well, why are you putting a big giant iron ram on the front of it? And go, well, it could come across a really big fish.
And how come the head on the front of the ram looks like Jefferson Davis?
Yeah.
Well, that's just an ugly goat.
Now, that's one of the things about topical stamps is, in my opinion, I mean, you know, you can collect anything you want, but the reason why I collect topical stamps is because of the story behind them, not necessarily the stamp. You know, if you collect U.S. stamps, you want to put a stamp in every hole in your album. If you want to collect topical stamps, there aren't any albums.
Right, you just got to kind of make it up as you go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's just it. The only bad way to collect stamps is not to collect stamps.
I should put that on a button somewhere.
Bumper stickers.
Bumper stickers, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I know you're just starting. Have you got an album or anything that you're going to keep your stamps in? Or?
No, right now it's... I'm actually, because I want to learn more about the general issues and stuff first, I've mostly started buying kind of the smaller, right now, kind of inexpensive stuff, because A, my budget doesn't allow it, because some of that stuff is ridiculously priced.
Yeah, join the club.
But right now I'm just keeping them in a stock book, because I have them to double as reference for mm-hmm. when I'm working at PSE.
Well, my chicken collection is, even if it's an individual stamp, it's on a little stock card, and I keep it all in a box. So I have a box of chicken collectibles. Not necessarily, it's not in a stock book or anything that you can thumb through.
Pretty soon, listeners are going to start sending you chicken statues.
Chicken statues. Well, I've gotten a lot of stuff from the listeners. Thank you very much.
By the way, we encourage anyone who wants to send Cash chicken statues, please do so.
Don't send live chicken.
You know, they'll send me eggs or something like that.
Oh, okay. Omelets.
Depends on how long they've been out of the fridge.
I remember some other people like Jessica, who used to be on the podcast. She collects Hello Kitties.
Well, she was big into American Indian.
Oh, yeah. That is. Mm-hmm. But that's a real topic. Hello Kitty is weird for a grown woman to, I shouldn't say anything. Edit that out. I'm not going to call anybody any names. Collect whatever you want, but... In my opinion,
I like Hello Kitty.
Aren't we touchy today?
So, yeah, I mean, you now have the display category. And that's what I'm going to do with my 1850
display
to 1850.
Category of what?
Display category of exhibiting stamps. I always criticize the exhibits of being pretty boring.
Yeah, you're going to start getting into exhibits.
Yeah, the display category allows you to put stuff that isn't necessarily stamps, but is stamp related into the exhibit. And so you have... Yeah. So you can put other things in the exhibit that add to the exhibit that may not be postage stamps, but put the story forward. And when I saw that, I was always disinterested in exhibiting.
I just found your winning combination.
Uh-oh.
You need to exhibit your chicken stamps inside of an incubator.
That would be interesting.
Yes, it would be.
Yeah. Well, didn't they have a 3D category of exhibiting? They had like a plexiglass thing.
Yeah, it's a display class.
Oh, that was a display also?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
I can't believe you didn't want my chicken egg mailer.
Nah, it didn't have chickens on it.
But it had chicken.
Chicken egg.
At one point, it had chickens in it, didn't it?
I would love to. Well, if I could find some fourth class tags that shipped chickens, that would be really cool.
Oh, I'm sure you can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just have to search long enough.
To ask the right person.
Revenue stamps on chicken crates? I don't know.
No. These are the fourth class parcel post stamps sometimes, but mostly they're going to be special handling stamps on tags. And one of the things that they shipped along with gold and currency and everything valuable was one of the things was crates of chickens. So I would love to get a tag with some stamps on it from a poultry farm from a tag, because that meant that it was chicks going through the mails. That sounded weird.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know kids went through the mail. I know chicks, but
as chicks, yes.
Return to sender. Return.
out to send them.
Thank you for joining us for episode 89. This has been Cash, Scott, Tom, and I'm your host, Dawn. You can reach us with your questions or comments at stampshowheretoday@gmail.com, Twitter at stampshowht, or leave a message on our Google Voice number 1-949-873-4298. You can also check out our website at stampshowheretoday.com or follow us on Facebook or watch us on YouTube. And as always, keep collecting.
This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, the book that teaches you about repurse, regums, color varieties, and much more. Get yours for $10 at www.philatelicsecrets.com today.
Hi, this is Bob Prager with Gary Poser Incorporated, and we're in Long Island, New York, and New Jersey, and our philosophy of Gary Poser Incorporated is this. We would rather pay very fair prices on 9 out of 10 collections that we look at versus trying to just offer very low prices on 1 out of 2 and making a big score. That's never our philosophy. So if you want to be treated fairly, please give us a call anytime at 800-323-4279. And again, my name is Bob Prager.
Hi, this is Stephen Patillo, also known as Stamp Show Steve. I'm sitting here in the offices of PSE, Professional Stamp Experts, and I'd like to say hi and welcome you all to come to the various stamp shows once a month in Glendale, Van Nuys, and Anaheim. You can find all these dates, locations, and maps at stampshowsteve.com, and we welcome you to bring your stamps in to sell or buy or trade. There's multiple dealers there to help you. I hope that you all can sometime venture out and come to one of our shows, look it up on our website, and come in if you have stamps for authentication purposes or grading purposes. Seek out myself or the table that represents PSE, Professional Stamp Experts.